Welcome to Middlebrow, a Services Scriptorium Daily. This is John Mark Reynolds coming to you from Biola University, where we have a live studio audience. Yes. Many, many chums coming to you from the four corners of freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior. With me, as usual, theologian par excellence, cartoonist Fred Sanders. Say hello to your mother, Fred.
Hello to my mother.
And Paul Spears playing the bear tonight in our version of Winter's Tale.
Hello to Fred's mother.
We love you, Fred's mother. We know you're the only person who listens to these podcasts. My mother gave up long ago.
That's because she lives next door now.
If, though, you usually listen to this podcast where we put big ideas through the digital martyrdom, tonight's big idea that's going through the digital martyrdom may be a little idea. We're going to talk about the structure of Tori. So if you don't have a lot of interest in the strange experiment in education called the Tori Honors Institute,
click.
Yep, goodbye. And for those of you who are still here, hi, Fred's mother, we proceed. Tori has been in existence for a good long time now, and we've been engaged in an experiment of dividing Tori into two houses. If you're an alum who was here before that took place, the two houses are the Johnson House, named after Philip E. Johnson, kind of the godfather of Tori, one of the founders of the intelligent design movement and emeritus professor of law at Berkeley. The other house, the G. Campbell Morgan House, Dr. Sanders, named after
G. Campbell Morgan, one of the most famous, a preacher of the late 19th, early 20th centuries, had an international ministry and taught at Biola for a year and a half back in the 20s. One of the most famous people ever to teach at Biola, so we named something after him.
So naming the two houses, of course, Tori itself, named after R.A. Tori, the founding dean and great round-the-world evangelist of the Edwardian and then up through the 1920s, really, inside of U.S. evangelism. So honoring the faith of our fathers and one contemporary, Phil Johnson, we divided in half. Now, what did that mean? How has Tori changed? What's going on if you haven't been around or if you're a current student? When Tori got started, there were two ways we could have devised the curriculum. And it was a real hard decision to decide which way to go. One way to go, the first idea actually we had, was to divide the curriculum into big ideas. The great book set ends with a list of big ideas covered in the great books. And some people actually approach the great books working from angels to whatever the Z topic that exists in the Synopticon.
Syntopicon,
that's right. The big idea book. We decided not to go that way solely because there wasn't a West Coast model that we could point to, and we were already trying out enough new and radical ideas such as rotating tutors. If you're not familiar with Tori, Tori students, yes?
Yes, I am rotating as we speak. That's true.
This podcast is also...
It'd be really good if you had 3D glasses on.
We have
right
little
now.
Visual, yes. It's subtitled for the hearing impaired. Actually, it isn't.
John Mark, what is the Tori Honors Institute?
Tonight we're going to talk about that division into two houses and what it means. One opportunity as we grew larger, good news for alum, student-faculty ratio hasn't changed. It's roughly the same. In fact, it's a little better than it was the first year of the program. And secondly, student profiles haven't changed. Even though we are admitting far more students than we could. The first year we admitted 36 students, the immortal class, though we admitted this year 88 students coming in. The quality of the students has stayed right at the same bar, the same SAT bar, the same GPA bar, within real close numbers. But what we want to talk about tonight, the division of the houses between this idea-centered thing we couldn't do and the chronological model, that is entering the great conversation from the beginning with something like Homer or early parts of the Bible and reading through to the 19th century. That was the Morgan House or the original way we introduced Tori, but it wasn't particularly a better way to do Tori. It simply was the way we chose to go first, and then when we could do something else, we were able to introduce that idea. So what we want to talk about with Fred and Paul tonight, how that worked and how we go about structuring it. Paul, I thought I'd turn to you. We've divided Tori in half. I still remain the director of the whole program. Tori remains united. And you're the chair of, or the house director of the Morgan House, the house chair. I don't know whether that makes you a comfy lounge chair or what kind of chair you are.
I don't know what kind of chair I was, but that's all right.
Tell us about the Morgan House and what people would think about the curriculum there, and what are some of the advantages of the curriculum inside of Morgan House.
The one thing about going chronologically is that you can participate in this understanding of the great conversation that's gone on in Western literature inside of the Western canon of great books. That's not to say anything about the fact that the Eastern canon, which in one way or another exists, is not good, but it's just this kind of a conversation that goes on inside of the West is a dialogue internal to itself. There are these big questions like, what does it mean to think about your humanity? And we are reading people like Homer, who are being read by people like Virgil, who are being read by people like Dante, and they are continually talking to one another about these great ideas that run over and over again. And you can see them even develop in the Western sensibilities intellectually.
And so for all current alum at the time of this taping, they would have experienced Torrey in that way. They would have come into the great conversation with Homer and some of the early biblical books, early Greek thought. They would have read Plato, kind of wasted Plato their freshman year, in a sort of introduction saying, forms, recollection.
The
and
cave.
Then somewhere in their senior year, they'll realize their paper they read on the cave was entirely wrong, but they don't get to go back. And so there are some advantages to the Morgan House. Namely, you come into the conversation the way people did, and some disadvantages. Fred, can you describe what you think are the advantages of the other house, the Johnson House, and how
and
you
house,
go about
the House
things.
Of Lords as opposed to the House of Commons?
Yes, that's exactly right. Does that mean you're meaningless, have little power, and are gradually being phased out?
That's roughly it, yeah. Madam Prime Minister. the Johnson House is thematically organized. So we have 8-unit semesters, which are interdisciplinary investigations around certain topics. So whereas in the Morgan House, you sort of reel off a few hundred years of something and study as much of it as you can. In the Johnson House, we've named certain classic themes that have emerged down through the ages. So on origins or on desire, the city and man, on knowing God, on the cosmos. These are the titles of the courses that you take in the Johnson House, and those titles actually do map out onto themes in certain ways. So we pull together from the sort of menu of the great books that we've been teaching in Torrey for all these years, we pulled our favorite books to group under each of those categories. Some of the big advantages include that we can assign books to the place where they are developmentally appropriate for students. So that we can read a little more Aristotle, some different Aquinas, some harder things, because we can deploy them in the junior year instead of having to read Plato with freshmen, because that's when he occurs in actual history. Another nice thing is in our selection of classic books to deal with. In the Morgan House, there's kind of a self-selecting canon process going on. That is, anyone that you take out, let's say you decide Homer's not that important, so you take him out. Well, that's not going to work, because Virgil will rise from the dead and scream at you, right? And as you trace the development of the Western conversation, there's sort of a self-selecting element to it. If you leave Ovid out, you're not going to understand big chunks of Virgil. That's less of a constraint on the Johnson curriculum. So while there are certain big names that you've just got to talk about, you've got to read their books, or you haven't done a decent survey of the Western intellectual tradition, it's not quite as binding.
What would you say, both of you, disadvantages are for being in either house? So somebody says, oh, I'm in Johnson House. I love being in Johnson House. What's a disadvantage? What's something, if you could and start Torrey all over again, what would you have gained by being in Morgan House, Fred? And then I'll ask the same question to you in reverse, Paul.
Yeah, the sentence is that Johnson House students are going to be sick of hearing and are just going to keep hearing anyway is, oh, but you guys didn't read Plato yet, right? Right, so you'd be right in the middle of a wonderful passage of something, and it's all just right there in front of you. But for students who didn't pick up the earlier voices in the actual flow of the historical conversation, there are some things missing. So Dante, for instance, is a radically different book in the two houses.
Right.
In the Morgan House, it comes after Aquinas and sort of encapsulates a whole thousand-year run of Latin theological history.
The greatest of centuries culminates in Dante.
Yeah. In the Johnson House, it's an epic. It's about the sixth book that you read in a freshman fall survey of great epics.
And if you're not careful, probably Dante is the best author wasted in its progression in the curriculum.
Yeah, there are, of course, advantages. They go straight from Virgil to Dante. Well, not straight, but they go from Virgil pretty rapidly to Dante. So they still remember Virgil and care that he's leading Dante through the
underworld. Right, exactly.
Whereas the Morgan students are
browbeaten
by their tutors. Guys, Virgil, underworld, remember? Freshman year? No.
Was I a freshman once?
We remember Thomas Aquinas.
Yeah, so one of the advantages of the Johnson House is the way that they synthesize, is the way that they are having you think about the Cinnian Man, or how they think about epics, or the semester on knowledge. Those things are giving you sort of hooks by which you can come to understand how the different intellectuals in history have dealt with some of these great ideas.
Yeah, you're coming to the ideas the way the people that came to the ideas came to them. You're thinking with Plato, and you don't have a lot of background that Plato didn't have, which you might run into.
But you're missing that. It's nice in the Johnson House to be able to have that.
Yeah, just sort of experience the world in some ways the way Plato did. You don't run into a book where, so for example, when you're reading Dante on truth,
right,
and you haven't read Sophocles, or very much Sophocles, there's a little bit of a problem there. There's a conversation you didn't have. So nothing's perfect.
Right. So you're not thinking about epics in a way as a genre as you would in the Johnson House.
Okay. In terms of structure, we'll get to the really dull part. And if you are online, we'll try to make available to you, if you're listening to the podcast, what we're referring to, which is a chart of Torrey and Two Houses. It's critical to see that lots of things that go on in Torrey that alumni would remember, or that you're looking forward to experiencing, things like convocation, the entrance of freshmen into Torrey, which takes place tomorrow night, Friday night, and we hope all you would come. That remains a unified all-Torrey event. Graduation remains a unified event. Many of our lectures, major lectures, so for example, when John Granger was here recently, that remains a unified event. On the other hand, the curriculum's different, and so faculty are beginning to specialize inside of each house and will less and less teach between houses.
When you say specialize in each house, you don't mean within the books in each house.
No, and of course, tutors could teach between houses and will occasionally, but more and more, you begin to think like a Johnson House person. That is this big conversation we're in, or a Morgan House person thinking chronologically, where the timeline is the key, is the backbone to what you're doing. I should say that I will continue to teach in both houses. The director, whoever the director is, will divide his or her time equally between the two houses. So I'll continue to teach inside of both houses and touch base with both kinds of groups. The office, the Torrey office, led ably by Jana Peck and my administrative aide, Michael Fatigotti, and Nikki Yant. Jana
Lodes.
Lodes, yeah, that's right. People should never get married. It's very difficult for me to remember. Having had such fun myself, I can only remember my own marriage. Anyway, we will continue to work for the entire program. So the Torrey level experience will stay the same there. I'd like to say, how are the houses organized differently on the ground? I'll start this time with you, Paul. As you look at the organizational chart, what do people in this room need to know about the structure of Morgan House?
Well, the structure of Morgan House is certainly going to be pointed towards certain kinds of expectations of how you understand the text. You're going to have to grapple with things like thinking about them as an epic. You're going to have to think about the way you gain access to the text in a way that is going to force you to consider genre, consider the time, consider the breadth of the discussion, and places where you would not, normally see hooks. You're going to have to learn how to develop them yourself. So there's going to be some distinctions there. Also, But there's not a lot of radical changes. In other words, pedagogically, there's really no difference. We're going to be pushing you to think more about the different genres, the way things hook together, but we're not going to do things radically different pedagogically. The faculty aren't going to be radically different in the sense of how they work with you. In one sense, there's going to be a lot of similarities, too.
Yes, and all the faculty will continue to meet together once a month to discuss Inner House with me, and I attend both faculty division meetings, which is also once a month. So each house, Morgan, Johnson House, will meet once a month. I'll go to both of those meetings as well to provide continuity. And then the whole faculty, Morgan and Johnson, will meet in one unified meeting once a month to discuss issues of common importance so that we don't fragment between the two houses. Anything, Fred, you want to say? This will be a little bit different because in some ways, for those listening, especially on the podcast, if there's a difference for them, it'll be inside the Johnson House.
Yeah, and this part is sort of dreadfully boring, but I have to say it anyway. The Morgan House was designed to get 44 units of your 60-unit Tory education out of the way in your first 2 years. That's designed to flex with certain majors, majors that tend to want you to get your prerequisites and your general education done freshman and sophomore year. Then come see them your junior year for the advanced classes in that discipline. So philosophy and English probably are the two stereotypical majors that that program works really well for. So that your Tory experience is 8 units, then 3 gigantic 12-unit semesters that you can't believe anyone can actually do. But then after that, this cliff of the junior year where it's 4-unit semesters from then on out.
It can become, negative side, a book of the week club. Or it can become a wonderful, splendid liberty into some meditories or into a group that only meets once a week, and so you can really concentrate on the book you're looking at. So it depends on how people play it out.
Yeah.
How will that be different for Johnson House students?
Well, this is actually the mechanism that sort of prompted us to create the Johnson House. It wasn't so much the thematic clusters idea. It was more the fact that we had some majors who didn't have that prerequisites and then upper division work sort
of
structure.
Yes, that's right. That was the trigger made this possible.
Yeah, it was the majors like music or science would be the most obvious ones that needed to be working on their skills all 4 years at a steady skill development kind of a way. So we put together a straight 8-unit, if I could use a engine block term, right? Just 8-unit courses all the way out for the entire 4 years, except a 4-unit class that last semester.
And you should say that we experimented initially with trying to do a chronological in the Johnson House, too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it didn't work out well. By going straight eights, the natural flow that can occur inside, and I have to say, since I had noodled out the original plan, I was allowed to sort of sit with a yellow legal pad and devise both the plans. And I can tell you, they cover essentially the same footprint, but they do them in radically different ways. How many books difference is there now, Fred? Originally, it was about 30. What is it now?
Oh, it's 25 or 30. Book discrepancy between the two houses. That is to say, houses that are books that are read in one house but not in the other.
And, of course, as time goes on and the faculty has taken ownership of the curriculum, my original plan is morphed into something entirely different as faculty try out books and get them to work and have taken ownership of the curriculum. But it's important to see the same minds that slowly shaped from an initial yellow legal pad what I threw out in the initial Morgan House curriculum, then shaped that, also set to work on the Johnson House curriculum. So there's real continuity.
We sketched in The Education of Henry Adams, which is exactly the right book to read in that semester, but pretty much everybody hated it. So that didn't work.
In fact, I began to mock it routinely. I would just come in and mock.
That really helped me in my teaching task.
Yeah, I think it was good.
I will say, because the Johnson House is just starting out, it's half the size of the Morgan House right now. There are 4 faculty and how many groups? 8 groups. Because of that, we're experimenting some more. We're doing sessions on music, taking great works of music as the text for a session. We're doing a number of other experimental things, including books we didn't think we could actually teach in college or books by, I don't know, my grandma or something.
Well, and
they're working out.
Hello to Fred's grandma.
Yeah. And that also is indicative of the way Tory started as, even in Morgan House, it was an experiment. We were trying new things, and then we got through with it. We sort of solidified the canon, and we said, okay, we're done here with this part of the canon. We cannot touch it, at least for a certain amount of years. I think we made a 4-year moratorium,
right? Yeah, that's right.
But then what Johnson House has enabled us to do is say all the things that we wish we could have done in Morgan House as we've reflected on it over the years, but we really couldn't because it would change the way that it's been constructed. We've been able to try some of those things in Johnson House.
Yeah, and so for those of you who are curious, who are listening or who are here, another thing we've been able to do is to experiment with Bible studies and other things. I have a class, an informal class, not for credit, on film that meets at my house on Wednesday nights. And so we've been able to do some skunk work planning, some things that are outside the mainstream in ways where we can try them out and they're not for units. We're not hurting anybody's education by doing a class that turns out to be silly or doesn't cover enough material or doesn't fit Biola's needs in that way. So we continue to experiment, but we're because we have more people, we're able to experiment in some new ways. We have faculty that try things like the urban plunge that's become a very important part of the curriculum in both houses, where we can take students inside the city. So Matt Jensen, one of the newer faculty members, if you're listening on a podcast, has been able to take
Matt's leadership role
there. I'm not saying hi to Matt's mom because Matt's mom and Fred's mom are having a fight. And so I'm siding with Fred's mom. Are there anything else on this detailed plan before we open up for questions?
Even though I'm Morgan House, an exciting thing about Johnson House is that the willingness of the faculty in Johnson House to really take this on, it is a real new thing in a lot of different ways. And they've really taken it on in an effective manner. And they're doing things where we get to watch them and in a Skunk Works kind of way, as you've described it. And I'm just waiting to steal things from Johnson House if they work. And when you did the music, I'm thinking, ooh, if that continues to work, we are stealing that thing and putting it into Morgan House. So part of it is we get to watch the experimentation that's been really well done in Johnson House and have a little bit of envy of that and take it on as it's successful. So that's one of the fun things about the Johnson House development.
Being in a growing program is exciting. It's as we add faculty, if you haven't been around for a while or if you are around for a while, if you look at the new faculty that we added this year, some of the most exciting people that I've met at Biola, period.
Thanks.
And at this point, it's getting to be a good thing. Paul, you are...
I know, I'm a bear. I'm not excited. Yada,
whatever. Blah, 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 blah. I love you, Paul. Blah, 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 blah.
One other thing before we open it up to questions. A lot of the questions are going
Fred
to have...
Fred Sanders, what is the Tory Honors Institute?
The Tory Honors Institute is a 60-unit... That's good material. You got your own stuff? A lot of the questions I'm sure are going to have to do with things like separation anxiety or
I'm working through that.
That's what the questions have been so far, at least. Here's the thing with dividing into two houses. The dream, the goal, the plan is to get Tory down to a human scale. What do we have, about 400 students right now?
Yeah, that's right.
Whew. You can't learn 400 students. Come on. What we want is for each house to have about 250 students in it and 8 faculty members. Those 8 faculty will only mentor, their 30 mentees will be within that house. They will only teach sessions within that house. It's possible, even if you're not some incredibly gifted people person, even if you're not Melissa Schubert, you can remember 250 students and their learning styles and where they are in their intellectual growth and where their group is and what issues they're working through. It's possible to have that in your mind all at one time so that as you drop in, as you're doing the rotating tutor routine, as you drop in on a class, if someone's talking a lot, you can say, that person always talks a lot. I will now help shut them down. Or you can say, oh, that person's talking a lot. She never talks a lot. Let's encourage that even more. It's not really possible to do that right now when you're teaching across 2 curricula, 4 years of 2 curricula, 4 years each, and 400 students.
One concern that I got from alum, and I want to express for the alum that are listening, is to point out that if you were in the first 4 years of Tory, that means a house will be roughly the size Tory was when you graduated. And our concern was from a pastoral level, and I talked to my dad who has pastored now for about 40 years. He's retired now, but over 40 years in ministry. And he's always felt like a church of around 200, 250 was a church that a pastor could really pretty much get to know everybody in that church and establish some real relationships. And I think that was our experience too. As we began to get larger than 200, as we moved towards 300, 350, for those alum who are in the middle years, you'll know it got harder to know everybody. And so by dividing into two houses, we'll get some of the advantages of being bigger, being able to bring better speakers. Victor Davis Hanson, we were able to bring in conjunction with some other clubs on campus to talk about Thucydides, thanks to student leadership from Robert Stevenson. And we were also able to bring John Granger and have another distinguished lecturer coming in the spring. So we're able to do more, yet at the same time, we didn't want to lose the intimacy of about 200 people hanging out together.
And John Mark, I would actually add that when you cross over 250, 200, what happens is you lose everyone. You can't hold on to anyone very well. You can only pick a few students when it gets that size. And so when you go back down to 200, 250, it becomes much more manageable inside of the classroom too.
Also, the rule of thumb is, when will we look like one institution? When will we look like two? Whenever it's to our advantage to do one or the other, right? Whenever it's better to have a small, intimate gathering of eight faculty.
Like if we're protesting,
students,
all of us together.
That's right. That's right. But when we need to be a big, come on, we're 500 students strong. We have 16 faculty. Well, that all of a sudden we're going to be one institution.
Yeah. Like when we're taking on the English department.
But you know that routine too, right? What's the value of your Tory education? Well, come on, guys. It's just gen ed. Settle down. Or this is like graduate school. This is the Honors Institute. Right? Whenever it's to our advantage to do one
the
or the other.
The secret plan to take over Luxembourg, in other words, for those of you who are involved in this, is an inter-house project.
Look.
We expect all of you to be involved.
Everybody needs to learn how to parachute out of a plane.
Everyone.
That's all we're saying.
So we did give you, and hopefully we'll get this online for you to look at, we did give you a couple of charts. We want to be as transparent with this process as possible. One great thing about new media is hiding information, one, doesn't work. Two, is a bad idea anyway for a community. So if you have any questions about this information, this is what we know, and it's a good time to talk about it because we've begun to nail down some of what the houses would look like. Let me say one word about the chairs for each house. I believe that devolving power and empowering faculty and empowering students is the best way to lead. I view that my job as director is to go to students. I see Matt sitting here who want to go make a film. Here's some money. Let me try to help you make a film. Let me empower you and empower your education. That's my goal. And that's my goal as director, and hopefully I've done a good job with that, is empowering faculty to make their own decisions. I can't think of a single important decision that we've made in Tory that hasn't been unanimous from the faculty, where we haven't all agreed and moved together, sometimes after very rancorous debate. At one point, Christina Rossetti was removed from the curriculum, and
I'm
still in pain about that. But arguments were made on both sides, and though there were good reasons to keep Rossetti in the curriculum, there were better reasons to add some other authors, and somebody had to go. And that decision was eventually made unanimously. It wasn't made by a secret little group of people. And so as I've looked at leadership, as we've grown larger, there are decisions that need to be made at a house level with the eight faculty working with a curriculum where I need to not be involved. I need to know what's going on. I need to keep the unified structure. And Fred and Paul, who've been here really from the beginning of the program was very tiny before either one of them became involved, were the right people right now to provide this kind of leadership. They were involved in the early days. And so they're empowered both to deal directly with some immediate personnel issues inside of faculty. They're also empowered to deal with student issues directly. However, I want to say something. You can't be expelled from Tory without passing through my office. You always have the right to appeal to me. And I am ex officio part of every decision. And so if something's going on, I can also become part of the process if that's an empowering thing, either to a faculty member or to the students who are sitting in here. But as much as possible, I want to have decisions made in the classroom or down as close to where real education is taking place and outside of my office. So I hope that's encouraging to alum that are out there or to students who are sitting here. Fred, Paul, do you have comments on this? Your newly elevated positions as kind of associates?
No, so let me clarify. Faculty can't be expelled either without going through your office?
In fact, we have already expelled you, Fred. I will say you are now the acting chair of the...
Wow.
Hey, before we go to Q&A, I do want to point out we have five other faculty in the room with us and a member of the office staff. So whatever questions you have, we can punt.
Yeah.
Like to say that one of the things that I've appreciated about working in Tory for so long is the camaraderie of the faculty, how much I've enjoyed working with everybody, and how we are continually blessed. When we last year we put our hiring on hold And then we hired at the end of last year a bunch of new faculty members, four to be exact. And we are continually so happy about how God is bringing amazing people into our department. There's this sense of collegiality and unity of purpose that really, when you even talk to other faculty members at different schools, different departments, you just don't find. I think it's a unique opportunity that we've had in our department that I can't even begin to express. So being the house chair, I don't know. I just mean, that means I'm just the first person that has to go talk with everybody for a second and we get agreement. And
yes.
And I wouldn't want to do it any differently because I'm so impressed with the colleagues that I work with.
I guess if you're a student here, we can say to you that the faculty are happy with their jobs. We like what we're doing. I'm happy to be here. I often get asked this. I have no intention of leaving. This is my job for life. As far as I know, you know, if the Lord tarries and if I'm allowed to do it, I think that the leadership team here has a commitment that's strong. They've been able to go other places and not gone. And if you're an alum, growth has allowed us to add exciting faculty. Melissa Schubert, many of you would remember as a student. And now is back as one of really the leadership team inside of Torrey, helping us make decisions, exciting faculty member. And yet, if you look at the list of faculty who are here, alum going all the way back to the first class would recognize many of the names and faces on the list. We've had very little turnover. We've been able to strengthen the faculty without losing people like Robert Thomas Lizzo, who've been teaching almost since the first year of the program, or Joe Henderson. Joe, what year is this for you?
17, 18?
Yeah, I think you've taught, you know, significant number of classes for 8 years, which is, of course, way over half the length of the program. And so most of the alum would know who you are. And so that's real stability. I hope to see some of your children as students. You know, I'll be retired, but wheeling around in my wheelchair.
He won't be able to see.
Let's take some questions. I already can't see. So if I miss some, yeah, Roy, there in the back. Fred, would you like to take that first, and I'll kibitz?
Which is, we pass that to Fred.
We do love Meditories. Let me give you as blunt and an honest an answer as I know how to give, and if I say something that's incorrect, I hope either one of you will correct me. We're doing this on the wing, and so I'm trying to give you accurate information. Meditories are a good and exciting idea. They were devised back when Torrey was more in flux and we had many students that needed to be more challenged. Their majors weren't challenging enough for them. And they were a way to do exciting and innovative things. Notice a lot of our, oh, we've really got to put exciting and innovative things down on paper, got soaked up by having to develop Johnson House. There's only so much mental energy I have and the faculty have. And so a lot of that innovative energy had to go into making sure that Johnson House was first rate, wasn't second rate Torrey from day one. So you might have noticed right now we're offering fewer Meditories than we have in the past. I'm not thrilled with that, but that was a necessary feature of developing Johnson House. Second thing, though, is to say long term, though there'll probably be one or two offered in each house as we get going, the vast numbers of Meditories that we used to offer, as many as four, probably will never return unless you count it cumulatively between the two houses. Because the two houses themselves offer options for innovation that continue that used to be done in Meditories that now will be done in different ways. Will there be Meditories? Yes, probably one or two in each house from this point forward. Will there be four Meditories a term again? Almost surely not. Is that about right? Is there anything you want to add?
That's about right. And the way you described the origin of Meditories, it was pretty much invented so Adam Johnson could work harder than he was allowed to in any other class.
Yes, that's right?
And so
absolutely
that's still
accurate.
Kind of the dream, is if you're just so maniacal about a subject that you want to take something like a graduate seminar but get Gen Ed credit for it, okay. Talk 12 other people into it and convince a tutor, then go nuts. What we had when there were lots and lots of Meditories, we had a lot of great things. We did some wonderful experiments. We had a Meditory on Mormonism. We had an Eastern Religions Meditory. We were able to do lots of interesting things that we can't do in the core curriculum. We still value that part of it, Meditories for experimentation.
And they almost surely will still happen.
But we were also starting to get a lot of, so why are you in this Meditory? It fit my schedule. Get out now.
Right.
Or I didn't really like the books in the regular book list. All right. Well, drop out of Torrey. It's the book list.
Yeah, and
right.
I think the other thing is that one of the things
that's
that
all there is to Torrey.
Right. One of the things that
You're really crabby. Are you like grandpa's?
And I, what
too
about
much
this?
John McCain.
And what's this first among equals, I'm just your friend nonsense in the Morgan House? The chair of the Johnson House is all about power.
Are you a maverick?
I keep my people in line.
It's Fred Sanders, the maverick of the Senate.
All right.
Get off my grass.
Wow. Okay.
Well, this is my house.
I was actually going to say something helpful, but no. The point too of the lowering of the amount of mediators has to do with the fact that that you said had to do with quality, and so we wanted to make sure that the faculty that were senior weren't being taken up by mediatory work, and that we were all teaching throughout the curriculum, because we thought that was the most important thing, that the general curriculum itself was being correctly dealt with.
Let me give you an example of a mediatory that would almost surely happen, though, if she wanted to do it. I think Fairy Queen, for example, or the Shakespeare mediatories, or in my case, I've had several people request, because we haven't done it in several years, a Republic mediatory. These are the kinds of mediatories that would almost surely happen in the future and will happen, you know, coming in the next spring and fall.
John Mark, you mentioned that you're not in one of the houses. You teach across both of them. Well, a full-time teaching load for a Tory tutor is 52 sessions. Right. If you have 13 sessions off for your administrative work, you pretty much can't see every group in a year, right?
That's
you
right.
You certainly won't see them twice.
And so I haven't been doing meditories. That's why I added to my own load and not compensated the Wednesday night class, so that I could do some of the work of meditories without taking me out of Johnson House or Morgan House, because I still want to touch base with all the groups. If I do a meditory, I will probably teach it as an overload. In other words, I would continue to do my normal core curriculum. I think it's important for me to be
there. So if faculty members that are full-time are teaching in meditories, what happens is we have to replace them with adjunct faculty, and we didn't want to do that.
Yeah, not very much. Now, David, seriously, will there be meditories of the high quality sort that you're desperate for, or where we bring in somebody from the music department to do a philosophy of music class? Sure, is the answer. Will there be four where one of them's kind of a weak choice and where people are just signing up for meditories because it fit their schedule? We hope never again.
Right.
That had become a dysfunction, not a bad, horrible thing, but we ended it. We'll revise it. I think we're doing, we do one or two meditories in the spring. So we never have quit doing them formally. So that's about where we'll be. Okay, other questions? Yeah, RL. Yeah.
We have a microphone, if you could step up to that, actually.
For those of you listening at home, Robert Louis Stevenson will ask us a question not related to Treasure Island. Arr.
To clarify, Johnson and Morgan...
He's so much younger than I thought, and not Scott's.
Johnson and Morgan students will both... can be in the same meditories. A meditory can have Johnson and Morgan students in the same class.
No, you can't, and nor can you date across.
No touchy.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was never really an issue for me anyway, sir.
So far, that issue has not been raised. I see no reason, especially using the independent study form. There are lots of ways around this kind of thing, that if there was a meditory offered on the Republic, for example, that I taught, that we couldn't arrange it so it was a cross-listed class with permission from your mentor, again, as usual, to take that class.
That'd be Jorgen House.
Matt Jensen, you have students from both houses in your meditory this term, don't you?
Are you cross-listed right now, Matt?
What's that?
Are you cross-listed? Do you have students from both houses?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Okay. So we both know that that will happen, and there are ways to make it happen.
Yeah. You have to go to the mic.
You can just go to the microphone. That way we don't have to pick the people. If you just line up at the microphone, we'll take as many questions as we can.
How serious are you about not crossing once all the houses are full, about not having tutors go from one house to another? Like, will Ms. Schubert not be teaching Shakespeare in Morgan House anymore?
Yeah, that's pretty much true. In other words, that's not an answer that you probably want to hear. But let me tell you the answer that is as true as we can see. Will there be some crossover? Right now in particular, yes. There are only four tutors inside of Johnson House. But every year for the next 4 years, there'll be an additional tutor hired, Lord willing, and the economy holds up so that we can keep growing and keep the students on board. And so it won't be the case that you'll see as much of people inside the other house. Now, of course, if you've been around when it's all been one group, that's a sad state of affairs. So I know that won't be popular, but that's the way it is.
There will be a little bit of overlap driven by, if you think about a Tory schedule from a faculty member's point of view, you know, we're in different sessions. We have these bizarre things where we jump from century to century teaching across houses.
I went from Dante to Frederick Douglass tomorrow in a 24-hour period.
Yeah, very strange. One of the things that when we make the teaching schedule, we try to do is minimize the number of books a tutor has to teach in a particular semester. So sometimes we can do that and increase the quality of faculty life by giving someone Luther in both houses if they line up in the same semester. Dante is being taught at the same time to Johnson freshmen and Morgan sophomores. So there what you'll get is one tutor will teach lots of Paradise and No Purgatory and vice versa. So there you'll get some cross teaching, but the goal is for people to teach in their own houses where they know the students and mentor them.
And so in particular, Schubert on Shakespeare, Sanders on certain theological books, yeah, you could expect some crossover, but that's not particularly the plan, so don't count on it.
And one of the other reasons is because when I go into a Johnson House class and I'm thinking about it, I have to switch how I think about the delivery of the curriculum. I have to think, right, Johnson House, right, they haven't read this. I have to stop and reform how I'm going to deliver the information.
And you don't know the students as well. You're essentially adjuncting.
Right.
Teaching across house is basically adjuncting by core faculty.
The communitarian aspects of the program for all but the director utterly disappear because their pastoral and mentoring aspect, they're not sitting in your pre-dawn rags meeting. Houses will meet to discuss students in pre-dawn rags meetings, so they have pastoral oversight over all of you. But if you go to another house, the pastoral aspect is gone.
As of this semester, Don Rags will be house specific. You will be the second tutor in your Don Rags will be from your house. It was becoming increasingly evident as Johnson House got big that to have a Morgan House faculty member there, that first of all, that faculty member hadn't seen you that often in class, didn't quite understand the curriculum and its differences. And so it's just going to be more productive.
And for most students, that makes no real difference, right? For most students, this is much ado about nothing. We're just trying to be transparent to you about the changes that are coming so rumors don't start.
But let me say, that's an important part of assessment. So if I want to be able to speak about what you're doing in the house that you're in. We're having a tutor right now bully a student.
Go ahead.
Are you in the same house?
Joe Henderson.
I just wanted to mention, like, when we think about how sad we are to not have Melissa Schubert teaching Shakespeare.
That we have someone better?
Is that what you're... We thought about that, and we thought, you know, when we divided the tutors into the two houses, and we thought which people would do a great job teaching Shakespeare in the Morgan House, or the same, say, if we thought of Fred Sanders again in the Johnson House, we thought, well, now we have a full-time systematic theologian, Matt Jensen, in the Morgan House, and you might mention Diane Vincent that we've just brought in, who's well qualified to teach Shakespeare. So we've divided the tutors in a way that that plays to our strengths.
Yeah, we also tried to do that temperament-wise and in terms of different mentoring
styles. I'm angry. Fred's angry.
Right, right. A cranky tutor in each house.
Yeah.
Actually, two in the Johnson House.
A nice tutor in each house. Say Johnson House, kind of the cranky house. It's the John McCain house. The Barack Obama house is the Morgan house. No, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. With Greg Peters and me both in the Johnson house, it's kind of a maximum crankiness there.
Yeah, that's right. It's a team
it's
of mavericks.
Curmudgeon-like.
Had to add Alan to kind of nice things up.
Alan, are you? Is Alan here? Are you the nice Johnson House person?
Oh, clearly.
Yes. You're also the only popular one from the sound of it. No, Melissa. Melissa's looking shocked. Oh, it's about
you. You just instantly added a third cranky tutor to the
Johnson
House.
That's right. Melissa
Perfect.
Schubert.
Melissa's like, I don't care if I'm cranky, but
director.
Am I popular?
I'm just staying out of that now.
Since you guys are dividing the houses by majors, is it any concern that you're taking in Morgan House a lot of artists and scientists, et cetera, out, and then in Johnson House you don't have philosophers and theologians, et cetera?
Yeah, let me be, again, blunt. I would have, and I'll let these folk respond, I would have preferred to bring Johnson House along in a non-major specific way. However, in conjunction with the university and through lots of discussions, the university felt that it was best, and they had good reasons for it, to help music, science, and some of the other majors that are front-loaded, where the major begins in an intense way right away, through having those students be required to be inside of Johnson House. That was a very intense discussion, and that's the way it is. So is there a problem with that? Yes, here's a disadvantage. When I look around in certain kind of Morgan House discussions, there, when I get to Plato, there are contributions that musicians used to make, and I usually have some good amateur musicians inside a Morgan House discussion, and it's too bad they're not there. Is that a disadvantage of dividing the way we have? Yes, we're not going to pretend it isn't. Let me give you an advantage. Because when I teach Plato or a book like that inside of Johnson House, I have many professional musicians. The intensity of the discussion and scientists about Timaeus, for example, can become much higher, much more specific, and much more focused. The same is true, of course, in the Morgan House, where the more humanities-oriented majors don't have to, in some ways, bore the other majors. So is there an interdisciplinary loss? Yes, there is. Are we sad about that? Yes. Is there some corresponding advantage? Of course there is. Do you guys want to add to that, or is that about the right way to put it?
Let me see if I can say this in a way that doesn't insult all of my students in the Johnson House. When you sort by major like that, you trim off the top most verbally gifted students from the Johnson House, right? You don't have those English majors and philosophy majors who are just going nuts with all kinds of verbal skill. Now, that doesn't mean we have a bunch of illiterate scientists and musicians in the Johnson House.
Schubert, you will be the new chair. Following the fenestration of Sanders by angry science students.
Yeah.
Angry, inarticulate science students.
You say bad things about us.
What does fenestration mean?
Johnson smash.
You're actually blushing, Fred, so you can't see that.
The nice thing is that it's all built on the fiction that incoming freshmen will not change their major. So we actually have a plan to confuse people even more at freshman orientation and get them to say one thing about what their major is, but in fact actually end up trapped in the Johnson House with their extreme verbal giftedness.
Right. Yeah. So are these ideal things? And someday, and I'll tell you my intention, and again, it's a valid decision. It was a decision made for good reasons. In 4 years, when we're finished with Johnson House and we do a self-study on the whole project, and we will carefully study what's gone right and what's gone wrong. Right now, as we got to the four-year point and evaluated it, way more things have gone right than have gone wrong. But one thing I will push to revisit is allowing students to pick houses instead of picking them by majors. That would be my recommendation. That doesn't mean it will happen, or even the majority of the faculty will agree with that. I'm just telling you that question will be revisited in 4 years. I can guarantee you if I'm still around.
Okay, so one of the good things about being a Tory student is the fact that I have access to a diverse group of tutors.
Yes.
So you said the ideal situation for faculty to student is, so I'm a faculty member and I have 250 students that I can build solid relationships with.
That's correct.
What about the restrictions for us students wanting to meet with faculty of both houses? So I'm a student. Will there be any restrictions on me to just stay within the faculty members of my house?
My perception is that right now, particularly for Johnson House students where we have four assigned faculty, is that functionally, no, there is no restriction. The restriction would just be time, right? Faculty have a certain finite amount of time. But as you well know, early on the term, nobody meets with faculty except for freshmen. And so if you want to meet with somebody...
who are terrified.
Yeah, and just meet all the time. And seniors are thinking, I'll meet the second before Don Rags and try to fix all my problems. If you want to meet with faculty in other houses, no one is stopping you. We want you to meet with as many people as you can. The only limit to this would be, ultimately, of course, people have to meet with their mentees before they meet with anybody else. But we're not increasing.
Even inside their own house.
I want to repeat this. We are decreasing the average mentor-mentee load. We are not increasing it. Does everyone hear that? And you should be grateful to Biola for that truth. We are now moving towards our optimum level of mentor-mentee relationship. If you can find another college where full-time faculty are carrying a caseload of 30 to 35 students. Nicole, do we have anybody over 35 mentoring? Maybe, Melissa, what are you at?
Aren't you 45?
Are you at 40? The first year, one of the first years I mentored, I carried a caseload of 50 mentees. But I don't know of any place else that can do what we're doing. And so it's exciting, and that isn't going to change. Can you meet with people in other houses? As far as we can tell, for the foreseeable future, yes.
Also, the problem, the situation you describe where you've got a limited number of faculty and you wish you could meet with others, that's, of course, the problem you have at Biola, right? By taking all your gen ed with us, there's a whole wonderful Bible department you're never having classes with. You're never having classes with great English profs unless you're an English major. Mm-hmm. So there's some opportunity cost there as well. And so, nameless Morgan House student who I don't recognize, it's going to get better.
Okay. who are you?
Who am I?
Well, yeah,
I'm joking.
Anthony. Yeah, he's crabby and joking, and it's really hard to tell. Like Grandpa Simpson, not on his meds. It's hard. Yeah.
I have another question.
Yeah, go ahead.
What is the plan for the addition of additional faculty? So what's the long-term ideal?
Yeah, let me tell you how faculty get hired. So because sometimes there's a perception I sit in a room and pick faculty. Nothing could be further from the truth. And then I'll let Paul lead off on describing how that process works. I, in my capacity as director, pick a group of about 5 faculty members to serve on a faculty hiring committee. I then delegate the positive power of looking at resumes to that hiring committee. I stay involved in the process, look at all the resumes, but I let them meet away from me so that I don't have undue influence on the process. As names are looked at and circulated, I get back involved in the process. I say, can we look at so-and-so again? At one point, both the committee and the director, my job, we agreed that we needed more women as mentors. And so we actually delayed hiring to look more intensely for qualified female applicants to hire. And so I became involved in that. There was full agreement. We've never hired anyone where there wasn't full agreement. How does the hiring work from a hiring committee point of view?
Well, I think that one of the things that we've discovered is through the years when we put out an advertisement for faculty members, it's hard for us to find someone who theologically is a fit at Biola, who is diverse as far as they want to reach outside of their discipline, and really likes this whole Great Books program. And so we've had to look really hard for people, and it has to be really intentional on our part. So we've actually gone out and said, okay, we've got to actively recruit the kind of faculty that we're looking for. And so all of our faculty, and actually Matt Jensen has been very helpful in this. He's very connected with lots of different people and has encouraged different individuals to apply. And that's kind of how we've developed our faculty outside of a regular advertising. We do the advertising, but we've mostly pulled from people that we know or people that know people,
yeah.
And they come in, and then we interview them from that side.
We've actively, as we looked, and we wanted a more diverse faculty, we, of course, actively solicited alum to apply, and we've had really good success with both bringing alum back in one-year positions, but also now we have 2 alum working in full-time positions.
There are 4 faculty spots open if we continue on our growth plan, and those are all Johnson House faculty, according to the current plan, which kind of raises the question, can faculty ever jump houses?
Yeah.
And yeah, they can. They're not set in stone. They have to do some kind of, there's something like a 4-year cycle, right? You kind of, you get your mentees out of the system and get assigned new mentees, and you know, you have to plan ahead for it, but there's no reason why someone couldn't decide to go over to another house.
We only have about 5 minutes left to go, so if you can just hang in there with us. We realize some of these topics are tedious. But we want you to understand the details of your education. And so we hope that's important to you, that how the decision-making works. Once the faculty committee decides on a group of candidates, all of us are involved in the interview process. I believe they've worked so hard that I try to only veto a candidate in extraordinary circumstances. And I can tell you right now, in all candor, I have never had to do that. By the time I get a final candidate, I've been involved in the process. They've worked hard. We, of course, have several now systematic theologians to review the theology file. I don't believe we've ever had Talbot even ask a question, essentially, in the last 3 or 4 years about an applicant, have we? Or a significant one, anyway.
Yeah, probably not. We talk a lot. So.
Yeah, it's a very smooth process by the time we get down to hiring. And I think the candidates that we brought in show you that we're concerned about quality. We are not hiring people where we think, well, this person will make me comfortable. We try to hire people that will raise the bar on me, raise the bar on other faculty. Yeah, that's right. And I think if you look at the schools the people we've hired come from and the excellence they've shown in scholarship and that they've been offered other jobs at other schools, despite the fact this is a horrible job market in the humanities, in theology in particular, you'll know that we haven't lowered the bar and that teaching you is an attractive thing. You're a bright group of people and you care, and teaching you is fun. Yes.
Well, as Dr. Sanders pointed out, the two-house system is sort of built on the idea that people don't change majors, or if they do, it doesn't present a problem. There are a number of people I know, including myself, that are in a Johnson House major but started in a Morgan House major. So we actually very rarely have sessions with people in the same field.
Right.
Is there a plan in the foreseeable future or even a really good way to do it to actually allow people to switch houses without reducing the quality of education?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. And again, I don't like the answer that I'm about to give you. And so we will revisit this in 4 years. But the answer from a Biola point of view is no. I don't have the power to let you do that. Do you understand? We actually had this discussion. We advocated more flexibility. And there are very good registrar reasons why that I don't have the capacity to do that. If I wanted to tell you, yes, we're going to allow you to do that, I could say that, but I can't do it, right? I can't change the catalog. And the catalog's a legally binding document, and it says if you're in a house, that's where you are. And that wasn't, like I said, that was a decision that was worked through. There are good reasons for that decision. I'll ask that that be revisited when we get to our next self-study, which is the next time I can ask my upline to revisit that decision. But for your time, your house specific. Now, here's what we can do to help you. Let's get down to helping you. If your schedule begins to present a problem for you, or you feel the need to be with more scientists, let's say, or with more mathematicians or more musicians, this is where a meditory in particular would likely be approved in your junior and senior year, where we feel like we might have created a problem for you, or a lack of flexibility in switching between houses has created a problem. Let us help you suggest to us an interdisciplinary and inter-house meditory that it will allow you to have that experience several times in your junior and senior year. Do you see how that could work? All right, let's try to live within the rules we have and be creative and think of ways to solve your problem. But we won't be able to solve it in the cleanest way. I couldn't if I wanted to. One more question.
Yeah, now you're talking to a student who's in both houses at once.
Yeah, which is theoretically impossible, but there you go.
So he doesn't exist.
Yes. Please don't announce your name so that all heaven doesn't fall on my head.
Yeah, I've now got a black hood over my head. No, I was just asking, as you're looking for more faculty for Johnson House, the typical person that you're attracting to come to Torrey is someone who's looking to teach, you know, from a philosophy or literature or some sort of that background. And in Johnson House, you've got, you know, your science and music majors, and their learning curve in a great books program is very much different. A pre-med major is going to approach Homer entirely differently than...
That's right.
And so as a faculty that's going to be mentoring within Johnson House, how do you look at how their field compares to a science major and how they're going
to... Let me throw that to Fred, who will have to supervise that. Let me say, we do think about that. And I do think about that, and it's a big concern. But Fred, you deal with it day to day.
Yeah, the thing that shapes who would want to work in a program like Torrey is really the units we deliver. If you look at what you're getting credit for, the general education, humanities experience, those are the units that we're responsible to deliver. Now, we deliver them to various majors, but it's going to be Bible, philosophy, English, the behavioral sciences. You know, that's our mandate. And so we're going to hire people qualified to teach that subject matter, which means we're not going to be hiring a scientist. Though, having said that, we're kind of crazy, and we've done pretty serious interviews with medical doctors.
Yes.
If someone's – the thing is, you got to be kind of weird to want to teach in Torrey anyway. So it's not like we can just go find any English scholar who actually thinks this is a responsible thing to do. Right. And it's very hard to find historians who are capable of engaging.
What do you mean I have to teach Plato and poetry?
Yeah. It's very hard
Jane
to find.
Eyre, I can't learn from Jane Eyre.
Historians who are willing to say, oh, these are not historical artifacts from various ancient cultures. These are living voices speaking to students in the eternal now and changing their lives. That your history PhD doesn't train you to pick up texts like that. So that the fact is, as we look at these next four people, we're looking for a whole range of skills. And we might get someone who's got, for instance, a science undergrad, but went on for a humanities doctorate. So we'll be looking for loosening things up that way. But in terms of trying to find a science or music professor to join the faculty, that won't happen.
What we're going to do now is we're going to end the formal part of the questioning so that you'll be able to go, and we'll keep our commitment to you. But we also know there are other questions. There's at least one more person with a question. And while the teardown is going on, there's no reason for us to immediately run away. So here's what I'd ask that you do. You let the crew tear down. You leave quietly if you're going to leave. And we'll keep taking questions sort of here as you have them in a kind of formal way while people tear down around us for a little while. But we'll be gone at 9:30, no matter what. Does everyone understand how this will work? Let me pray for you then. And for those of you listening on podcast, this is John Mark Reynolds with his usual cohorts in crime, Fred Sanders and Paul Spears for Middlebrow, where this time, Torrey Honors Institute has undergone the digital martyrdom. Thank you, and God bless you.